I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to episode 10 of The Story Studio with your hosts, Luke Condor and Daniel Wilcox. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to The Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. It's a show for filmmakers, writers, comic book makers, crowdfunders, authorpreneurs, creators, and anyone looking to tell stories in the modern world. My name is Luke Condor of Kate, and I'm joined by...
Daniel Wilcox.
And we have a guest today, Mr. Darren Scales of Darkwave Pictures. How's it going, Darren?
Hi, yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, good.
How's the creating going in general? Is anyone working on anything, writing anything, filming stuff? What's going on?
Well, we're still working on developing the next part of the Darkwave universe. We've been working on that in the background with Edge of the Storm. That's like the sort of the calling card. So we're looking at either a feature or a series, ideally a series. And that's expanding upon the themes that you see in Edge of the Storm. So, yeah, it's pretty busy.
Cool. Well, we'll go into that in more detail. We'll ask you all about the Darkwave universe and stuff. But Dan, what about you, man? What have you been up to?
I have been reading The Rot, They Rot, which is obviously out of the two books that we're doing together, it's the one that you've written the first draft for. So I'm kind of been going through that at the minute. I've literally just thrown it onto my Kindle and I'm reading it as if it's an actual book. So it's quite cool to see the stuff that we've planned together and that we've created together actually in book form, because obviously I've spent about 2.5-3 months working on my side of it, which was Lazarus, and yeah, it's refreshing to go into the other side of it and see what's going on.
Yeah, I'm doing the opposite, so I'm reading Lazarus, which you wrote the first draft for, and it's really interesting to see like the old ideas and the beats that we sort of came up with together and we put down, to see you fleshed them out, and so far it's reading pretty good. It's a lot further along in the process than I was kind of worried it might be, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's going to be good, I think. It's going to be wicked.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. It's interesting to see some of the ideas we came up with and how they've either twisted a little bit or how they've kind of stayed on track and the different takes. But yeah, it's exciting. So I was kind of not losing momentum, but I've gotten to that point where I was like, oh, I've got a lot of work still to do. But they're actually in not bad shape, I don't think. So yeah, it's just been... just been that mainly, but
yeah, I think we're aiming to launch the first one at Christmas, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Tentatively. Yeah.
Cool. So you two met in IRL in real life, right?
In sombreros.
Okay. Where was that? Yeah, what happened?
Well, so my partner is a part of, excuse me, I'll just go croaky with it. It's fine. It'll be sexy. My partner's part of a drama group in Lincoln in which me and her were invited over to the sort of what Nikki and Simon, are they the directors?
They're part of the team. She's been there for quite a while. And I think Simon, not so long, but they're together. So we're all invited. So Cash and I did some filming for them in the past. And I think we've kind of sort of stuck with them ever since. And we got invited to a few things. And then we met Daniel there and obviously your other half as well. And we got talking. I mean, it was supposed to be Mexican, but then we started going to like sci-fi and dark wave, Dungeons and Dragons, and a few other
things. There was a lot of D&D, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there was a lot of that. So, and then we just talked about Edge of the Storm and said, well, look, you know, we're trying to get it out there and stuff. And then, you know, Dan said, well, you know, we do these podcasts and stuff, so why not check us out? So I thought, yeah, cool, let's do that.
Yeah, and then Darren invited me to the premiere, which unfortunately I was unable to attend at the last minute because of babysitting complications. But no, I ended up checking out the film pretty much as soon as it came out, and I was massively impressed, Darren. Honestly, when you meet people and they go, "Oh yeah, I do films, and it's all kind of done by me," and it's, you know, you kind of there's that reservation in your head where you're like, "Oh, it might be all right," but honestly, fantastic. And like Luke says, we'll go into that in a bit, but.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it wasn't all done by me, obviously, but
it wasn't.
I understand the sentiment. Yeah.
Cool. How? So, Darren, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you started filmmaking? How long have you been making films for?
Well, I started making films back in the 90s with just like the old VHS cassettes and stuff. And then in the late 90s, we made our first Star Wars movie. And it all started in our backyard. You know, the first company I set up was called Backyard Productions. And we made everything from Aliens to Geriatric Park, Batman Returns Forever, just tons and tons of spoofs, basically. But all the way we were doing that, we were learning more and more about filmmaking. And although the stories were always a bit silly and we were having great fun, we're also learning a lot about the process of making movies, and also the logistics involved with that. And then later on, we then moved into more original stuff. So we started creating this dark wave universe, and we took that further, made a feature called The Drift back in, we shot in 2012, and then in it came out 2014. And then we just thought, well, okay, let's try and up our production values. And each show we do, each movie we've done, we try to get the production values higher and higher. And hopefully with Edge of the Storm, I think that's pretty much as high as we've been able to get. So we're very pleased.
Cool. And have you been... Is that when you first started writing stuff? Like, you know, when you first started doing original stuff, or were you writing before that, or?
Well, in terms of the writing of The Drift, that was a collaboration between me and Sue Morris, who's a script writer predominantly, but she helped me with the concept of the story, making it work. And then once I was happy with the story, I created the concept of the Dark Wave universe and the key components within it. She helped me then sort of tie that all together and make it sort of conform to what a story should be on screen. She then wrote the script for that, which again I had some input in, but she did the main, you know, the main part of that. And then that carried on then with Edge of the Storm and also Phoenix Rising, which is the sort of the franchise next step, whether it's a feature or TV show. So again, I would go up the story, characters, and then throw it to Sue. She would turn it into a script. We would then sort of back and forth it and develop it that way. So we're kind of developing the story at the same time that we're developing the script, which kind of worked very well.
Yeah. How long have you, the Dark Wave universe, how long has that been in your mind? Or did you come with the original nugget of the idea, or how did that come about?
Well, it came about, the Dark Wave universe as is probably started about 2009. So it's been about, you know, 5 or 6 years, 6, 7 years in development. But The Drift came out in 2012. Sorry, we shot that in 2012. So we already had a pretty much established universe by that point. But there were components before then. So the Phoenix, which is the starfighter that you see at the end of the movie, you know, spoilers, is... that was made out of Lego many years ago when I was like, you know, teenager. And I made it out of Lego and developed it and whatever. And then
how did you fit it in your room? It's pretty big.
I have a very big house.
Oh, okay, cool.
But no, it went from there. I did this Lego model. I had no idea what I was going to do with it. I just loved it to death. And I thought, I'd love to make a movie with this. And I thought, as I learned about filmmaking, well, clearly you've got to have more than just a spaceship. And it kind of turned into, although only Edge of the Storm is a kind of a clue, but ultimately it's going to be like Knight Rider in space. So you've got this spaceship instead of a car that's alive. It doesn't talk like Kit does, but it is alive, and it has a crew of two instead of just the one like in Knight Rider. But other than that, the idea is it's going from planet to planet fixing all the problems the Dark Wave caused and the Ministry and all that kind of blah. So it's all sort of tied
together.
That
sounds very cool, and I've just realized, Dan, we haven't done our big whoops.
Oh, we haven't.
Yeah,
that's cool. We can edit it.
Okay, cool. we'll jump back into this in a second then. So big whoops for the week.
What a big whoop.
Dan, have you got anything you want to bring to the table?
Yeah, my big whoop's actually, I think it's more of a little whoop. I was basically listening to the Sterling and Stone guys podcast, The Smarter Artist, just because I've gotten to a point with writing where, because we're doing so much now, we never take, I feel like it's sometimes we don't quite take a breather and appreciate what we're doing. And it was just a mini episode, which was, it was about being efficient with your time and knowing that there's only so efficient you can be. So obviously we're doing a lot and we're trying to fit in time, and I'm getting up earlier and going to bed later to do more and to try and fit in as much as I can. But obviously it gets to a point where you have to say, no, you're okay, and you're comfortable in how much you're doing. And just listening to this sort of 5-minute episode just kind of helped me step back a bit this week, take a breather, and then kind of prioritize the work that I'm doing to make sure that I'm doing it the best I can.
Yeah. Do you have a cutoff time in the day when you say I'm not going to work anymore, or do you? No, I'm guessing.
No. No, it's basically if I get the thing done in the day that I want to do. If not, I will do it till late.
Yeah.
I should have. I kind of want to implement it, but...
Yeah, I think... I tried to say at 8 o'clock, I stopped doing stuff because I need at least a couple of hours to just like veg out and watch TV and just chill with Kat. What about you, Darren? Are you working full-time at the minute? What's your situation like?
I never stop. It never stops. See, the thing is, you try. I mean, I try and, I've been saying for like the last like 4 years, that I want to start playing games, you know, on PC and stuff. That's not happened. You know, I think.
Well, you kind of already are just a game that will hopefully earn you money in the long run.
Well, that would be nice. I would just for people to see it. I mean, that would be really cool. So, I'm always busy. I work at local university teaching part-time associate lecturer there, and I do some sort of filmmaking stuff. So that's the bread side of it. But no, it's just one thing after another. I mean, I used to be in the RAF and I left that in 2012, and I thought, right, great. Now I'm going to have some time to myself. And I just have not stopped since then. If it was quieter in the RAF.
Yeah. So do you find yourself working, do you get up early, or like what time do you normally start?
Well, if it's, I try to, if I can, but I'm not a good morning person. In fact, when I was doing the post-production and the visual effects, all the guys on The Drift and in Edge of the Storm, we generally have like a late start, to be fair. We probably don't even, you know, start working till about sort of 10 in the morning, but then we don't normally stop until about 2 in the morning, if you know what I mean. We all seem to sort of shift across, it seems, in the world of post-production. But then when we're on location and stuff, you know, I was up at 6:30 finishing at midnight each day, because that's the way it is. You know, you've got to put in the time.
Yeah. On location sort of life. Yeah. I guess my big whoop is, I've just seen the, Ben put on Slack, the trailer for the third season of Black Mirror. Are you fans of Black Mirror? Do you watch it?
I haven't watched any. I've been told it's fantastic. I just not got the time to. Well, I haven't had the time to get to it yet.
It's so dope.
Yeah, I'm saying. That's the other thing. But when I'm working, honestly, it's ridiculous. At uni, people are saying, we start talking about. I'm still talking about Star Wars, and they're going, "Oh yeah." You know, about Rey. Rey? Who's Rey? I'm talking about Luke Skywalker. You know, the young guy. You know, oh, you mean the old guy loses his hand? What, lost his hand? What are you talking about? I've been so busy making movies, I don't have time. But no, honestly, there's a whole load of movies and TV shows I'm just lining up. I've got Blu-rays like up the yin yang stuff I have not seen. It's nightmare. So I have.
It's the curse of art, isn't it? I've got, because I want to obviously read more books to be better at writing, but it's finding the time to get to them when you're writing to try and read. It's
My to read pile is just growing and growing and growing. To watch as well, because like Luke Cage is out now.
So for that. Yeah, I want to watch Luke Cage so badly, but I'm halfway through Jessica Jones, and I feel like I need to work my way through them.
Yeah. Yeah,
I did watch Stranger Things. That is something I did do. I did it like in a couple of days and just sort of box setted that whole thing.
You did that one right, yeah.
But yeah, and Luke Cage has just come out as well. I said, oh my god, am I gonna, you know, do that as well? But it's difficult.
Mm. Darren, have you got any big whoops for the week? You want to celebrate anything or?
The big whoop for us really. Edge of the Storm has hit 20,000 views, which is really cool. Yeah. And The Drift, which has been out, although it came out in 2014, we didn't go online until about 10 months ago because we were selling all the DVDs for charity and stuff, which we did all that, and that was cool. But in the 10 months now, it just broke 500,000 views. So we're
fantastic.
Wow. Nice. Yeah. So just going, jumping back then, rewinding back to Dark Wave. So I watched it, I think it was, when did you first put it online? Was it quite recent?
September 16th.
I think maybe like a couple of weeks ago I watched it. But I remember like just looking at the... Was there a big budget? Because it looks like there were some expensive shots in there, to me anyway.
The budget for the film was just under £5,000. And a lot of that money went on licensing for music and other bits and bobs and logistics. A lot of the majority of the stuff that you see, we managed to get for nothing, including the aerial photography, the use of the cameras. What we've done in the past, and it's been the same with Edge of the Storm, is that the people we get involved, we give that product back. So Turtle Canyon Films at Pinewood Studios helped us out. They're obviously now showcasing it themselves. And then people in the production can use it for their own showreels, provide them with content. The same thing we did with The Drift. Helen McAvoy, who was our visual effects supervisor, she's now a visual effects producer for Double Negative when she worked on Terminator Genesis, San Andreas, and a few other things. And a couple of other artists there worked on, now working for Sky, and did Fungus the Bogeyman. So that's the kind of way we managed to get the costs down, although we had to obviously pay for, you know, feeding the crew and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think people realize sort of how expensive filmmaking can be. I think you did a brilliant job of like those shots. I didn't know that was a real location until I watched, you know, the big satellite dishes. I didn't realize that was a real location until I watched the behind the scenes making of thing.
I know a lot of people have said, oh, you know, well, you know, that's not very good CGI, it's a bit bored. Well, sorry about that, but you know, they're actually real, those dishes.
Because yeah. Whereabouts were they? Because obviously Lincoln's surrounded by RAF bases and stuff. It was on one of those, right?
Yeah, it was it's a place called was called RAF Stenegal, which is near Louth. And they've been there for years and years and years and years. And you can go up there and look at them and stuff. It's private land, so you obviously should seek permission, technically. going there and looking at it is cool, but filming is obviously not. You have to get clearances and permissions and stuff, and we did all that. Eventually took a while to try and find the owner and what have you, but I saw those dishes many years ago when I was in the Air Force. I actually climbed the tower, there's a big tower near next to it, and I went to the top there and had a cup of tea, which is very nice, as you do.
Very British.
I'll send you the picture. In fact, it's on my Facebook page, actually, in my one of my albums, just sitting there, just a cup of tea, and then dishes down there, you can just see them. But I just wanted to use it, and obviously we had to add the hills and the mountains in post because they're on.
They were fantastic. When I saw those shots, I genuinely had a moment where I was like, I thought you said this was filmed in Lincoln.
It was hard work making that work, and a lot of planning on location to try and make it match as best as possible. Even the valley shots at the beginning with the truck driving along. We had to, you know, work hard to make that match as best we could, the parallax effects and stuff like that. But that was two guys. So there's 185 visual effects shots in Edge of the Storm, and only two guys did it, Mike James and John Carling. And they obviously have their own day jobs, so they have to, you know, balance that with, you know, living as well as doing the visual effects shots. So, you know, hats off to them.
Did you have any help by funding bodies or anything like that? I know that a lot of people are getting into filmmaking, they want to make short films, there isn't really any money. Some people do the crowdfunding thing, and other people go to iShorts, and there'll be some like London Calling or whatever else there is nowadays.
Yeah, the short answer is no, I didn't. I did think about it, and given the budget, I just saved up. I say just saved up, but I did. I self-funded the film. The good thing about it was, there was, first of all, we had Captain Credit Card. And then, because the film was produced over a set number of months, it was able, you know, not all the bills didn't come at once. So I was able to sort of save up, have you. So that was the way. And it was just a balancing act, deciding, well, look, do I either, because if you go to the crowdfunding route, which is great, don't get me wrong, and it does help a lot of people, but you may not get your money, and it's a lot of hard work. And frankly, to be honest, for me, it was easier just to go out, earn the money, and just put it into the film. If it was going to be something like 20, 30, 40, 50,000 pounds, that's a whole different ball game, and I'd have to. There's no way I can. I can't do that again. I can't make a movie like that now. I'm completely and utterly skint. You know, that was and everything. But it was, in many ways, the simplest way, so I could just crack on and make the film.
If you only had £1,000, would you still be able to make the film, but just cut on certain elements?
Well, technically, I mean, like I say, the costs are, I mean, I've made movies for less, absolutely. I mean, that's the most expensive short I made. The Drift, which is a 100-minute movie, that was also £5,000. Emperor's New Clones was £3,000. Our Indiana Jones movie, Doom Raiders. These are all on our website, by the way, called backyardproductions.co.uk. Check them out all on there. But Doom Raiders was Indiana Jones, shot in Cyprus, and I was based out there in the Air Force at the time. That was only 1,500 quid. The cheaper you make it, the more you have to ask of people, and that is a big thing. And because even if you sometimes, you know, we say we can't even feed you, bring a packed lunch, and sometimes they're pretty cool with that. If you're making spoofs, so Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Batman, that kind of stuff, then there's generally a lot more enthusiasm because it's a franchise that they understand and love and want to be a part of. When you're making totally original sci-fi, or any story for that matter, I found it to be a little bit more difficult. Although now we had The Drift, Edge of the Storm was a little bit more easier to get people involved because we had something to show them that they then wanted to be a part of. So it could be done.
Kind of. So what are some of the challenges of, you know, being independently producing a sci-fi film besides, you know, money and restrictions sometimes with location? Are there any sort of big hurdles that you've come up against?
Yeah, the biggest hurdle is marketing and getting people to see your film. It's as simple as that. We put the film online a couple of weeks ago. We're doing all the tweets, we're doing all the shares, you know, we're contacting some celebs, but they're not interested, and that's fine. You know, they must get contacted by thousands of people. Don't even bother with Simon Pegg, you know, because he probably doesn't even read his account. In fact, I know he doesn't read his account. So you do all the stereotypical things. I've sent The Drift off to Fox, Warner Brothers, loads of distribution companies and whatever. Got a couple of offers of distribution which were rubbish. None of them offered any marketing, so that's the hardest thing. I mean, you don't give up, don't get me wrong, we've still got 20,000 views. And in fact, Edge of the Storm has already been pirated on YouTube. It's now on another YouTube channel called Sci-Fi Shorts, and I'm only telling you because if you go on there, you know, I'm adding the counts, you know, they've got 5,000 views, so there's our view, 15,000 plus theirs, that's 20,000 plus Facebook, that's 2,000. So I don't really care. I want as many people to see it as possible. So actually, it's marketing. Oh, and also a channel called CG Brothers, who I keep seeing lots of sci-fi stuff on there. They do a lot of more visual effects. They've just asked, I've just done a deal with them, and they've got a million subscribers. So Edge of the Storm is about to be featured on their channel as well. So hopefully that'll get counts up.
Have you thought about sending it to like Short of the Week or, you know, any of these other... I guess online gatekeepers, as they were.
There are a couple we've seen, a couple of short on Facebook. There was a short thing. We do submit a couple there. We do the whole in case you missed it and then tag the film. Some of them buy it, some of them don't. Thing is, it's not normally personal when they don't reply. It's probably because they're just being inundated, or it just gets missed in the trail of all the other tweets or all the other things. So you just have to keep repeating and hopefully they'll buy. And we have... submitted it to quite a few festivals, which have been accepted into a couple already. And there's a few in the waiting, you know, we have to wait for the notification. But we're already at the Raw Science Fiction Festival in Los Angeles. We've been nominated in Sci-Fi Cine, which is in the UK. Parallax is considering us. Geekfest is another one. So we're pushing out that way too. Although I'm not really sure if it's a festival-y type film. I think it's probably a bit too commercial, which was the intent, because what we really want is a commercial deal. So
you've invested 5,000 of your own pounds, you want to make that money back, I'm guessing. Is there like a long-term plan, and so you want to make a TV series, is that right?
Yeah, it's not so much about making the money back. It has been something I really wanted to do, and I'm really happy with the result that we've got. The Phoenix especially is something that's been with me for many, many years, and to finally see it flying in a story with all the sounds and the way it flies, all that stuff, we didn't just give it to the effect guys. I told them how it had to move and what it did. So that's a reward enough for me. In terms of the future, absolutely, unashamedly, we're trying to get a deal. I know it's just like an absolute mega long shot, and so does everybody else, but you know, you miss every shot you don't take. And I really believe that it's a good franchise and a great story. And the feedback at Comic Cons, because we've taken it to Comic Cons and shown people, feedback online has been really, really positive. And all that we're collecting to take to London, to Netflix or wherever, and say, look at this. Everyone thinks it's fabulous. You know, let's do something with it.
I was saying to someone earlier that was asking a bit about, you know, the stuff that I'm working on and writing and stuff and whether or not I'm in it for the money. And I remember saying to them that it was, for me at the minute especially, it's a case of I don't have a novel out and I really just want to see my name on a novel on a bookshelf. So do you think that is essentially the equivalent of, you know, your Phoenix? There are people that have in their hearts this vision for years of when they're younger and they just want this thing produced. And I guess the first moment, because when I saw the Phoenix appear, it is quite it's one of those powerful moments where something just happens and you're watching this magic happen on the screen. For the first time you saw that, you must have felt just what, like overwhelmed? Just,
oh, it's proper goosebumps. I mean, the whole, I wanted the Phoenix to sort of slowly reveal itself. So it starts off as a, you know, like a meteor through smoke, and then it flies over and you see the shadow of the Phoenix.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Oh, a cool name for a film. Anyway, you see the shadow of the Phoenix fly over the dishes, and the sort of clues as it slowly becomes more and more revealed, and the engine's roaring, and then it opens up and suddenly it transforms into this like bird shape type thing. Raptor, as we're calling it. That's what Bird of Prey is. It's a raptor.
Yeah.
Not dinosaurs, it's birds. Although dinosaurs came first. But anyway, right. So it's raptor. and raptor sounds cool. So we're stuck with that. Yeah. It sounds better than bird. You know, bird mode. It's like, go to bird mode. What's that? Oh, bird mode. Okay, tweet. What are you talking about? Raptor mode sounds much better. Mm. So anyway, so it goes to raptor mode. Yeah, it definitely, I mean, the smoke, and then we put lights on it. So when it comes close towards the camera, these big lights come on. That was actually to hide a load of issues we had with visual effects. And if you can't show it, light it up, just blind the audience. But actually, it looked pretty menacing. Mm. And the shots, like with the claw coming out, the talons coming down. It definitely was a really special moment. I really enjoyed the last couple of minutes of the movie. I mean, not the whole film. There's lots of like moments of family. There's moments of struggle. There's conspiracy, mystery, heartache. Obviously, you have the issue before the Phoenix arrives, which I'm not going to say. There's another thing that happens, which just kind of drives the story. But when the Phoenix turns up at the end, it's a big deal.
Mm. It's really unique as well. I remember me and my partner Fee just sat there just going, I've never seen a ship do that before. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, it actually has a reason for it. When we make Phoenix Rising, you will find out what that all that's about. Well, I'm very much into practical type motion and movement and reasons for being there. And although ultimately it's still fiction and technically it would be totally disproven, I suppose, but the idea of it being able to move that way so it can fly in a variety of atmospheres and a variety, it's combining both our technology, our aeroplane technology, spaceship technology, with avian technology, you know, birds, how they fly. And in fact, we're doing it already with real aeroplanes now. A lot of the Russian ones have these vector thrust engines. They can sort of slide in space. There's a very key subtlety about the Phoenix, which if you watch it again, if you haven't noticed the first time, which is when it comes down, the cockpit, the head stays absolutely still. Whilst the rest of the ship is doing all this and sort of lining up, the head stays absolutely still. And that's deliberate. I remember seeing a sparrowhawk at one of these bird of prey places, and they basically made this, they put all these posts, and basically the bird of prey, the sparrowhawk, it flew around all of these posts to get to the food, you know, the guy was holding. But its head, the whole time, was focused on the meat. It was only interested on that target, and the rest of its body was doing all this kind of stuff. Even its wings were shrink, you know, moving out of the way from the post to make a straighter line as possible. But its head was always focused, and I really wanted that to be a key, you know, unique point for the Phoenix.
You could tell.
I don't think I can do that.
You could tell there's no, I can't. You could tell there's you know, plenty of passion here, like for avian technology and stuff. So, how long was the production process for this film? Like, when you first start it?
Well, technically, we started back in 2013, but it was abandoned or put. It was shelved, basically, because the drift was taking longer to finish than we expected. That whole movie took 3.5 years to make in the end, which was way beyond what we thought it was going to be. But, you know, 1,400 visual effect shots, you know, it was going to take a while. So it was 2013 was the first time I went up there. But in terms of, and then I sort of started speaking to a couple of script writers, Dominic Bright and Sue, and they started working on a few ideas, and I started throwing things into the mix as well. And then eventually they came up with an idea for a script, and then that got shelved, waiting. So it wasn't really till about January, February 2015 that I really thought, okay, it's time, because the drift was done, that was finished. And then we shot in July 2015. The whole shoot was 5 days, but the filming was only 3. So we had a day to set up, a day to rehearse, and technically rehearse that was. Then the actors came in, and then we shot like 3 days, 3.5 days with them. And then from July 2015 until probably July 2016 was all post, mainly visual effects. That was the thing that took the longest. It did allow the edit to be refined. James Griffiths to do the score, which I just love. I mean, I know you always people, well, I love the score, but I really love the score that he did. It was so cool. So he had time for that. And they were able to, and then also we were afforded the time to get it graded down at Pinewood, and also sound mix down there, which, you know, made a massive difference.
So all this time, so right from the first conception of the idea, and then you do all the filming or the post, you get it already, and then you do the premiere. How are you feeling when you're in the cinema and then you're waiting for the film to start and there's all these people that you're going to see for the first time? How are you feeling? What's going through your head at that moment?
It's weird, actually, because the film has had its premiere, which I was insanely nervous for. I'm always nervous at the premieres. I don't know why. I just sit on the edge. I'm on the edge of my seat the whole time. I'm just waiting to see, you know, not so much did the audience laugh at the right points, because there's not really much comedy in the film, but, you know, are they gasping at the right time and all the rest of it? But I remember watching it at Pinewood. We screened it for Shane Rimmer and Robin, and Natalie was invited, but she was on another job. But we basically had a cast screening, because they're all in London. It was difficult to get them up to London, so we did a cast screening down at Pinewood, and that was shown. We converted the film to DCP, which is the same format you use for cinemas. It's a proper cinema. It was upscale. It was shot at 2K. The whole film was 2K.
That's like the XML type file system, right? The really complicated one.
Yeah, whatever you just said, I've no idea. I was just told it was called, oh, it's a DCP, it's very good quality. Yeah. Okay, it is. It's about 70 gig, the file, it's huge. It's not like anything, you know, we would play with. But seeing that at Pinewood, at the John Barry Theatre, which is their main screen at Pinewood Studios, and it was just it was a private showing at lunchtime between two other showings. We had to like get in there really quick and just sit there. Good job the film was only like 20 minutes long, so we could have time, because obviously everything we do, you know, is favors and people just appreciate what we're trying to achieve and wanting to help. You know, we can't pay anyone, so Pinewood really good about that. They saw I've worked with them before on a few other little projects, and they like what we do. We're not making any money, we're not commercial, but I'm sure that if we were to go commercial, that would be the first place we'd go to. So yeah. It kind of works. But yeah, it was awesome. Seeing it on the massive screen, oh, it was just so good, especially at the very end of the movie. The bit that sends chills, to be honest, down my spine is all the credits have rolled up and it just comes up with Dark Wave. Edge of the Storm. Oh my God. So cool. It's so cool.
Yeah, so by that point, you're not actually sick of seeing that, because I'm guessing in the editing process, you're constantly going through.
Yeah, you do. I mean, certainly the editing process was probably about 8 weeks. Because obviously it's a relatively short movie. And of course you go through little cuts, and it went down to my co-producer, Nick Long, at Turtle Canyon Films. He sees a lot of shorts. I don't really. I've only made sort of features, albeit low budget, whereas he's a bit of a shorts meister. Mm. So he was able to look at it and go, well, look, okay, this is dragging. You know, be good for a movie, but not good for a short. So he was very devil's advocate and able to trim things down and what have you. In fact, the ending of the movie was changed considerably because of that. And then, but after that, it gets quite quiet because the visual effect, all you're waiting for now is visual effect shots to go in. So you're not really watching the edit anymore. You're just waiting for shots. So for about 6 months or so, I didn't really have much contact with my film because there's nothing to do, really. So that was fine. So by the time I got back into it and then we started grading it and finishing off the final sound mix, it was getting very, very exciting. And I'm not tired of watching it now. I think I've watched it probably 4 times this week. In fact, I'm doing an audio commentary tomorrow. So... I do enjoy it. I think it's because it's so short as well. Most of my movies are long, so you've got to sit down for an hour and a half to watch The Drift or whatever, and it's like, okay, if you want to do that, that's cool. But with this, you can just watch it in your lunchtime. You know, I've actually watched it on my phone a couple of times, you know, between lectures at uni. Hopefully none of them have been watching it during my lectures. That would be a bit embarrassing, but
it's the worst thing to watch during your lectures.
True, yeah.
You can't really tell someone off for that, can you? Why are you on your phone? I'm watching your movie, sir.
Okay. Well, should we share it with the rest of the class? You know?
Let's watch it again.
Not again. Yeah. But no, I do. I still enjoy it. You know, definitely liking what we've done. But it's the best we could do. I mean, there are some things about it that I would change. There's a couple of sound niggles here and there, but you always have this. But to be honest, you know, with the people, the response we've had with the film from people we don't know, especially, you know, just saying they think it's really cool. Some people are a bit upset about the ending, that it kind of is a bit of a, you know, bit of a cliffhanger, but that's the point. You know, we want people to say that so that we can get investment.
It's definitely a film that tells a very narrow part of a bigger, much wider universe. It definitely comes across.
You get a lot of that build up.
It wanted to be, I mean, it starts off very small. Well, you have the shots of space, but it's just about this little family, isn't it? It's just about, you know, mum and dad and their little kid. And then as David goes in the bunker and finds out more things and sees, there's always like clues just piling in. There's even a shot of the Phoenix just sort of spinning around this top secret spaceship. And then at the end, the last sort of 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes, including the spoiler climax bit before the Phoenix turns up, does start to push. Actually, there are bigger forces at work. There are bigger things. And at the end of the end of the story, David and Sarah's story is kind of finished, and Ben's as well, probably. They were running and now they're not. Whereas the Phoenix comes in, it's like, well, what's all this about? Where's this come from? What are these two miniature ships coming and all that? There's a lot more going on.
So is Dark Wave Pictures, what's the future aspirations for, is it your own production company, Dark Wave Pictures now? So is the future aspirations just to tell stories in the Dark Wave universe, or are you going to do more commercial stuff? Or?
Well, the plan at the moment is, I've got a couple of other projects in the pipeline, sort of sat there, again, shelved, just waiting for opportunity and stuff. The thing is, I mean, I've been making films like this for, you know, a long time, and I've sort of got to a point where, not to say I'm fed up with it, because that would be wrong, but I want different challenges. The challenge I have to deal with is having a mixed crew, having a large range of crew, and dealing with issues that when you have no money, the compromises you have to make when you have no money versus other compromises you make when you have a limited budget or you have a professional budget. So if I'm going to make any more stuff, then without sounding snobby or whatever, then it has to be a funded project.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I would still use the same people, but we then can just put everyone in hotels and just get accommodated and just film properly and not just have to spend enormous amounts of time just trying to ferry people about just because they've got a job to go to. They can work for me.
Yeah.
So the plan is, if nothing else, is to develop the Dark Wave universe, absolutely. And there's tons of stories, particularly with the Phoenix, Jason and Star, who are the two people that fly in it, and you hear their voices at the end of the movie. But I do have some other ideas that are sort of sci-fi connected, but comedies in the real world, in our world sort of thing. And a few other bits of the pop as well. And if for example, you know, it came to the point where, oh, Dark Wave pictures are doing very well, and people like it, and they say, well, actually, they've got this other idea. Once you become known, it's the same old thing as like Simon Pegg starts off doing Shaun of the Dead, and now he's writing Star Trek. You know, it's if one thing led to another, then there is potential. But for the moment, I've tried to sort of try and do them all in the past, and that's not worked for me. So I'm now focusing on just Dark Wave. And then if that works, then perhaps we could expand.
Yeah, it sounds smart to focus on the genre for now and build it from there. Sorry, go on, Dan.
How much of Darkwave universe have you got planned?
Well, a lot is the short answer. I mean, I can tell you some of the stuff. I mean, basically, the idea is that you've got the Ministry, who are now, you've got the Phoenix, who you see, and Jason and Star. They're being hunted by the Ministry, and the whole how the Phoenix came about, how Jason and Star became the crew, the powers that Star has. She's similar to an organic. You see what an organic is in the film, and in the Drifter as well. You see an organic, but she's called a Starlight Child. So she has the power of an organic without needing a crystal. And there's only like 20 of those in the galaxy, and the Ministry is hunting them. And they're all children, and there's a reason why they're children, and it doesn't happen to be that way. So you've got the Phoenix escaping from them, trying to rescue the Starlight children, get them all back together. You've got organics coming out of yin yang. Everyone is still stuck in space and stranded. You've got Anderson, Sarah's dad. He's still stuck out in a drift. And then the Phoenix have got plans about how to get the Phoenix back, because they want it back, because it was made. It has a connection with the Ministry. It was made for a very specific purpose, and it's not the purpose it's now being used for.
Are all of these stories going to be told through film? Are you looking at any sort of transmedia? Have you thought about doing some novels and maybe getting a bit of money together from that or anything like that?
Well, it's difficult because I even tried writing Phoenix Rising as a novel, and that lasted about 4 months, and I just gave up at the end. I'm just not a writer. But having said that, TV franchise is the way to go for like the canon. Is the main how I see it going from my point of view. But one of the things I have talked about, and it's one of the reasons how I was even able to get Edge of the Storm made, was I reached out to writers and said, look, here's my universe. Go play. See what you can come up with. You know the setting now. Here are the rules. You know, you can't kill these people, these particular ones. You can't destroy the Phoenix. You can't do this. You can't do this. But other than that, go for it. And we had some come back. We had about five or six scripts came back, just like five or six pages. That was all it was. And Dominic wrote one, which was very close to what I had in mind for Edge of the Storm. I already had the idea. I knew what was going to happen in Edge of the Storm, but it wasn't joined together. And Dominic brought in some really nice little points, and that then got developed, which is why he's the lead script for the film. So yeah, I would love to. I had an idea called Project 5050. This comes from fan films, where in the past, certainly, you know, you get like these cease and desist orders. I know that Star Trek CBS has given a particular one a bit of a kicking at the moment. But what I wanted to do was basically say, look, if you go and write a story in my universe, provided you follow these rules, so you don't kill off all my characters that I kind of need, you can sell it. That's what I'm saying. You can actually market. You can call it Dark Wave, whatever your story is, but with your name, you go and e-publish it, whatever. And the Project 5050 basically is you get half and I get half, or Dark Wave Pictures gets half. And see if anything came of that. Now, I mentioned that in London, and they were very unhappy. They were not happy with that at all. They were like, what do you mean? I said, well, look, you either sue them and they can't write anything, or you get half of what. And funny old thing, because I pitched that idea to the guys in London in 2012. And now on YouTube, a lot of the time where I used to get like, you know, your music muted and all the rest of it. And sometimes that still does happen. But more often than not now, what ends up happening is the company that owns the rights to the music just slaps an advert on and it's starting to make money from your film. So they're just doing what I already said.
Yeah. It sounds like Amazon have Kindle Worlds, which is basically where they found a way to monetize fan fiction. But it's smart. I mean, they're good stories. Well, I mean, they are now getting edited and proofed and stuff. But yeah, I mean,
people want it. That's it. If people want it, why would they stop? That's what I couldn't understand with London. They would say, well, we can't. We own this. If someone made a Harry Potter novel, blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, why not? If they're going to make, you know, if it's a good and it sells, you're making money. So long as it follows the rules, like I say, you know, don't kill off, you know, Hermione or whatever it is. Or
yeah. And it doesn't have to be canon either. Like, could be separate. Yeah.
Everyone wins.
Everybody wins. You don't have to read it. That's the thing, you know. And they're making a lot of pretty rubbish sequels and reboots, you know, Terminator, you know. So. I'm sure the fans out there could think of some better stuff, you know. And if they are, let's see it, let's monetize it, and everybody wins.
Cool.
So, sorry.
It's all right. So,
another thing.
a lot of our listeners are sort of independent writers and authors and storytellers. I know for a fact that a lot of them are going to want to get into making films and they want to make their own Dark Wave universe or Edge of the Storm type film or whatever.
Light Ocean.
What's that?
It's Dan's fan film.
Oh, is it?
It's just me twisting Darkwave.
I see. Well, originally Darkwave was called Starlight. That was the first name, and then the Starlight comic came out. So that name although the new name makes it better, to be honest. Yeah. So,
what would you say to those people out there who want to get involved and make their own stuff?
Well, I think ultimately. Don't be put off by production values, because not to say that my production values are particularly excellent. There's always going to be a movie better than yours. There's always going to be a movie not perhaps as good as yours. But the reality is, what really counts is the story. And there's some great, I mean, some of the really old Star Wars fan films. It's one called Ryan versus Dorkman, which is just a lightsaber fight. And I don't even think they've even put the lightsaber glows. It's just two guys smacking the crap out of each other with toy lightsabers, and it was one of the most popular Star Wars fan films ever, you know. And there's me making this super Emperor's New Clones with like an hour-long storyline and massive sets and CGI and all the rest of it, and it's okay, but it just proves the point that you don't need to have super production values. What you really need is a good story. And if you've got an idea for a good story, you know, then shoot it on your iPhone. It doesn't matter, because if it's good and you have convincing actors, you know, you can't go wrong.
There you go. That resonates with our manifesto, I guess, just to, you know, use whatever just you've got to make a good story. Yeah.
That's
There's no excuse to not start, really.
No.
Because you'll only get better as time goes on, so.
Absolutely. And your characters will develop as well. So not only, you know, the filmmaking process is quite different to books. So you write the treatment, which is basically the story, the narrative. Then you write the script. We have the actions and the dialogue, etc., obviously. But then, of course, you have actors and they go in and they always obviously add value. Duh. But what I mean is that once you start like seeing your script turn into a reality.
Yeah.
If you know your story and you're on set, you can add stuff, augment, make it better, etc. It's not improvisation, but it's just how you can develop it more. And then you have the edit process. So again, you're going back to your story and you're seeing it on the screen now. So it's another perspective. Yeah. So it's a really great way to develop your story. And not once there did you have to worry about whether you shot on Arri or Red or whatever. You could have still done all of that with an iPhone.
Yeah. They say a film is made 3 times, right? In the scripts, in the shooting and in the editing.
Absolutely. And even visual effects now. I mean, the end of our film changed dramatically because of what we were able to achieve with visual effects and how you can make it look very, very different. Technically, yeah, the main ones, those are the three, yeah.
Cool. Okay, so we're coming towards the end of our time.
Wow, that was quick.
It was.
Oh, yeah.
Flies by.
You're incredibly passionate, and I think it's evident in the way you talk about your story, first of all, and the production behind it. So I just want to say thanks for coming on, first of all. It's really nice to meet you, not face to well, sort of face to face in a digital way. But we've got a quick fire round.
Quickly, please.
Where we've got some questions. We're going to fire them at you. Don't worry too much. Just
a bit of fun.
You've got 5 seconds to answer each of these questions.
Okay, not at all stressed about this now, but okay, fair enough.
I've changed a couple of the questions as well, Luke, so there might be some surprises for you as well.
Oh, okay, cool. All right. Do you want to go first, Dan, or do you want me to go?
After you.
Okay, Darren, First thing you do when you wake up?
Go to the loo and brush my teeth. Not in that order. The other way around.
Last thing you do before you go to sleep?
Drink a glass of water.
Favourite teacher?
Mr. Wallace, English at Barclays School in Stevenage.
What makes a good filmmaker?
Oh my God!
Prayer.
passion and understanding of the creative process.
Cool. Favourite film?
Star Wars A New Hope.
Honey or jam?
Honey.
Favourite word?
Bum. So, it was just the first word I could think of. Favourite word.
Oh, it's my go, isn't it?
Phoenix. Sorry, I was... Phoenix is my favourite word.
It's too late, we'll accept bum. Spielberg or Lucas?
Oh my God, Spielberg.
Who's your spirit filmmaker?
Oh, I don't know what that means. Spirit as in...
Whatever you think it means.
Okay. I don't know. That's a toughie.
We'll come back to it. Dan, yeah. Do the next one.
Luke or Han?
Luke.
Cool. Who's your spirit filmmaker?
Spirit filmmaker would be Stanley Kubrick, actually.
Oh, nice. Okay, nice. Cool.
Just think about it now. Well, and it's 2001 especially. I just cannot believe that movie was made when it was made. Unbelievable. Totally unbelievable. A man with a vision. And I've got lots of stories about him, which I can't tell you about because they were totally complex. But he got it. He got it.
Yeah. So where should we send people to, Darren? Where do you want them to go?
Okay, if you want to check out Darkwave Edge of the Storm, darkwavepictures.co.uk, or if you just Google Darkwave Pictures, Darkwave Pictures on YouTube, we've got our own channel, same thing, Darkwave Pictures. So Darkwave Pictures.
Cool. Dan, what about us?
Check it out. Yeah. Fantastic.
It is a good film. Yeah, I'd recommend it to you. Dan, where should we send people?
As always with us, go to www.hawkandcleaver.com, and if you leave your email, you can get a free book from us, and also check out the Other Stories podcast.
Cool. Okay, that sounds good to me. All right, guys, I'm going to stop the recording.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.